From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. June 1st marks the official start of the six-month Atlantic hurricane season. Hurricane Wilma in 2005 was the last hurricane to hit the state, leaving emergency managers worried that residents have become complacent about storm preparation. A look at what experts say Floridians should do to prepare as we explore storm activity predictions for the coming season. Plus, the National Flood Insurance Program provides policies for 5.1 million properties nationwide. Florida accounts for nearly 40% of those policies, and the federal program is nearly $24 billion in debt. We take a look at the current status of the National Flood Insurance Program and efforts to expand the flood insurance marketplace. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. For the remainder of the hour, we'll be exploring flood insurance. Policyholders with the National Flood Insurance Program saw their premiums increase in April. The program, which provides the vast majority of flood insurance policies in the U.S., is currently digging itself out of a nearly $24 billion debt. Of the federal government's 5.1 million policies nationwide, nearly 40% of those are properties here in Florida. Through a bipartisan effort led by Florida U.S. Representatives Dennis Ross and Patrick Murphy, Congress unanimously passed the Flood Insurance Market Parity and Modernization Act. That measure is helping increase the number of private insurers offering flood insurance policies and helping provide customers with more options. Meanwhile, among accusations of fraud and lengthy delays, National Flood Insurance Program officials this week announced the latest changes to the program aimed at increasing transparency and restoring credibility. With the reauthorization of the National Flood Insurance Program due in 2017, we're exploring the current status of the National Flood Insurance Program. Joining me now is Christian Camara. He's Senior Fellow and Florida State Director for the public policy research organization R Street Institute. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks a lot, John. Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you with us. Before we get into the live conversation, though, I recently caught up with Chris Heidrick, who is principal at the Heidrick & Company insurance team. He's a member of the Sanibel City Planning Commission and chairman of the Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers of America's Flood Insurance Task Force. He provides us with some background on the National Flood Insurance Program, beginning with how the program currently finds itself nearly $24 billion in debt. Let's hear that conversation now.
Really stemmed from two specific events. Prior to Hurricane Katrina in 2005, the National Flood Insurance Program went into debt and out of debt many times because that's the way it was designed. It was not designed with capital and surplus. It wasn't funded. It was backed by a line of credit to the U.S. Treasury, and the program would borrow from that line of credit during good years and pay or during bad years and pay it back during good years. 2005, we have Hurricane Katrina, which, no question, was a very serious weather event. But at the same time, the majority of those losses were really the result of levee failures. Those levees were actually designed to be able to withstand a storm the size of Katrina. They simply failed. So you know, that was the first significant loss that caused Congress to really take a very close look at the National Flood Insurance Program. And then in 2012, we had Superstorm Sandy that created Superstorm Sandy was about $9 billion in losses. Katrina was $17 billion in losses. So there you go. Those two events caused the debt that the program has today.
And looking back at the debt the National Flood Insurance Program faces, is there any clear pathway on the horizon for paying that sum?
It's going to take a very long time. The National Flood Insurance Program generates a little over $3 billion a year in premiums. So it's not something that can be paid off very quickly. And, of course, that's what got the attention of the General Accounting Office. The program has never defaulted. It is current in its payments. As a matter of fact, it has paid down about $1 billion of its debt. $23 billion is the current balance, but it has paid off about $1 billion over the last couple of years. So like I said, it's going to take a very long time.
And looking back at 2013, you know, after Katrina, after Sandy, coastal property owners were up in arms over potentially dramatic increases in their flood insurance premium rates under the Bigger Waters Flood Insurance Reform Act. And as I understand it, you know, the folks who were facing these very dramatic premium increases of tens of thousands of dollars over a year, they got a lot of the media limelight, but they were actually just a small fraction of folks who were being impacted. Tell us about that and really how Congress addressed that issue in 2013.
Sure. There were two places within the National Flood Insurance Program where subsidies occur. And when I say subsidy, the U.S. taxpayer does not make up that difference. It's other policyholders than the National Flood Insurance Program that make up that difference. So the first place are homes that were built before flood maps were adopted. On Sanibel, that year is 1979, and most of Lee County that year is 1984. Some parts of Lee and Collier County are 1981. It varies community by community. But when the homes were built before the flood maps, there were no maps or requirements to comply with. The National Flood Insurance Program didn't have any data to set an actuarially correct rate, so they set the rates based on what they thought consumers would pay. The primary objective when the program was created in 1968 was to have affordable flood insurance available to anybody who wanted it, and of course there were no private markets that were offering the product at that time. So the first place where there are subsidies are those homes that predate the flood maps. The second place, and these are cross subsidies, there's a provision in the program called grandfathering. If you build your home according to a flood map, you're in compliance, and that map is later revised and characterizes the risk as more hazardous. It's essentially a change to a building code, and there's no place in our government where a change to the building code requires people to go back and retrofit immediately. And so the National Flood Insurance Program was the same way, that if the maps are revised, it becomes more hazardous, you're not required to suddenly elevate your home. You can be grandfathered back to the less hazardous area. And, of course, you're underpaying. It's essentially a subsidy. And newer buildings that are compliant are essentially paying a little bit more to balance that out. So in 2012, Congress said, we're $23 billion in debt. Actually, it was greater than that at that time. Let's eliminate all these subsidies, and let's do that all at once. And those policyholders that were benefiting both by grandfathering and by having those pre-flood insurance rate map rates saw astronomical increases all at once. It was a very small percentage of all the policyholders. But for those people who were impacted by both of those provisions, it was extreme.
Gotcha. And as I understand it, you know, the pushback in Congress about that was that folks who were living in particularly high-risk areas, everyone else shouldn't have to subsidize them.
That's true, but it's important to realize, I think one of the things that tripped Congress up and even some of the trade associations is they were looking at the Bigger Waters Flood Insurance Reform Act of 2012, was this characterization that a very small number of people will be impacted. That turned out to be true. The problem is there were concentrations. So you think of a town like Fort Myers Beach, for instance, that was very heavily developed before the flood insurance rate maps were put in place. There are very few places to go. If all the homes in that community are at ground level, then where do you choose to buy? Where do you choose to rent? Where do you choose to locate your business? There simply weren't any structures that were elevated. So then the financial impact of Bigger Waters would have had, you know, a very serious impact, economic impact on Fort Myers Beach, and that definitely would have rippled out throughout Lee County. It would have been an economic disaster had Congress not acted in 2014 to modify the Bigger Waters bill and create some relief.
All right. And Congress unanimously approved the Flood Insurance Market Parity and Modernization Act that was championed, as I understand it, by a bipartisan effort of Florida Congress members. But tell us about what the aims there and how that tries to get more private insurers to enter the flood insurance market.
So Representatives Ross and Murphy did a great job, a great thing for Florida with that act. There was a provision in the Bigger Waters Act that said that if you left the National Flood Insurance Program while you were required to carry flood insurance because of a mortgage, the mandatory purchase requirement, you would not be able to return at a subsidized rate. In other words, if you left to go to a private insurer and for whatever reason you felt the need to return to the National Flood Insurance Program, you would have to return at full risk rates. That created a disincentive for people to leave and go to the private market. Representative Hensarling, the chair of the Financial Services Committee, made it very clear in 2012 that his objective is to allow the private market to take some of this risk off of the back of the U.S. government. And we are now in a spot where there's excess capital in the reinsurance markets that's reducing pricing, that's increasing underwriting appetite, and that's generating a lot of interest from private insurers who are looking to deploy that capital. And since then, I can think of about a dozen different private insurers who have entered the market. The Market Parity Act that you mentioned removes that. It was really an unintended wording that created a barrier and kept people from moving to the private market.
All right. And, I know that you testified before Congress in January. Was that related to this effort?
It was. It was related. It was the start of the reauthorization process. The next day was a testimony on the Market Parity Act. I didn't testify there, but I testified. It was really the insurance subcommittee, which is chaired by Representative Lueckenmayer from Missouri, as the kickoff to 2017 reauthorization. The National Flood Insurance Program has to be reauthorized every 5 years. Because of the disagreement that was created after Katrina in 2008, Congress couldn't agree on how to reauthorize the program, what it should look like. There were, I think, 17 short-term reauthorizations between 2008 and 2012. The program lapsed a couple of times. The National Association of Realtors said that that cost about 40,000 home sale transactions to fail during that period. So there's intense focus to make sure that we don't have the same degree of uncertainty, that we have a reauthorization that happens on time in September of 2017. Representative Lueckenmayer said that his goal for his subcommittee and for the Financial Services Committee is to spend 2016 drafting legislation that would reauthorize the program, and then 2017 attempting to get that legislation passed.
Gotcha. And, just as far as having more options for flood insurance outside of the National Flood Insurance Program, I mean, is this just based on, the basic free market forces where, allowing more people into the marketplace is going to increase competition, give consumers more choices, and hopefully keep premiums down?
That's exactly what we're seeing, and it's not for everybody. I certainly do see some people who are better off staying with the National Flood Insurance Program, and it's not necessarily those people who are receiving subsidies. The private markets actually, from what I've seen, tend to be targeting those people who are receiving what's referred to as a subsidized rate. Those are risks that the National Flood Insurance Program should want to cede off if their actuarial data is saying that it's not profitable. But, actuarial data can be sliced and diced in a number of different ways. The private flood insurance company use probabilistic modeling as opposed to rate maps. That's providing an awful lot more granularity in their ability to set rates, and that's working to the advantage of a lot of policyholders.
And as far as the success of bringing in more private insurers into the flood insurance marketplace, is this something that you would say is growing quickly, or would you characterize that growth as perhaps more of a trickle at this point?
I think it's important to remember this is a brand new market.
Right.
And it is, I'm encouraged to see the number of insurance companies who have put product into the marketplace. It's going to take them time to tweak that product as they write policies, get data, and make the proper adjustments. I think it's going to take quite a bit of time. I mean, it's been about 18 months since the first private insurer started offering flood insurance, and the private industry is still less than a 1% share of the overall market. So it's. I think you're probably looking at 5 to 10 years before the private market is a substantial share of the overall flood insurance market.
But overall, you would characterize the situation as things are getting better, things are improving.
Absolutely. It's encouraging. And when you think of there's a subset of policyholders who are receiving increases of 25% a year. That's by state law, by federal law. That will continue to happen. But these private flood insurance companies that are entering the market are providing some relief and dampening the financial impact of some of the changes that the National Flood Insurance Program has made to try to increase its own financial stability.
And as I understand it, the 25% cap on year-over-year premium increases, that is the cap, but that not everybody's actually seeing that. Most people are seeing much lower increases.
Correct. I mean, about 10% is the increase that we're seeing for most of our policyholders. I think that applies pretty evenly throughout the state and the country. And that is in line with what we had been seeing before Sandy and before Katrina. 10% increases are pretty much in line. It's really a small subset, probably about 10% of all policyholders that are seeing that 25% increase. And specifically, those are people who own second homes that were built before the flood maps were put in place, or commercial properties that were built before the flood maps were put in place. Those are the only two categories that are receiving the 25% year-over-year increases.
All right. And you know, with the official start of hurricane season now fast approaching, do you have any kind of general advice for property owners, particularly those, you know, living near the coast or in a region where they have an elevated risk of a flooding event?
I think it's important to recognize that flood risk is probably the most underestimated risk of anything that's out there. Your risk of experiencing a flood over a 30-year mortgage is actually greater than your chance of experiencing a fire. But people don't hesitate to buy homeowners insurance. They do hesitate to buy flood insurance. And I think a lot of that is just the catastrophic nature. Flood events are not common. I mean, they do happen in certain areas. We can point to Columbia, South Carolina, Houston, Texas. Hurricane Irene caused extreme flooding damage in Vermont. There were some significant floods a couple of years ago in Boulder, Colorado. It can happen anywhere. And when it happens, it's always extreme. If you were to ask people on the barrier islands of New Jersey a week before Sandy to assess their flood risk, they would have come up with a very different answer than they would have today. And the same thing holds true for Katrina. So when people are thinking about whether or not they should buy insurance, they should think about whether or not they can afford to absorb the loss and what is their tolerance for risk.
Well, Chris Heidrich, thanks so much for speaking with us.
I'm happy to speak with you, John, always.
That was a previously recorded conversation with Chris Heidrich of the Heidrich & Company insurance team on Sanibel. Joining us now is Christian Camara of the R Street Institute think tank, and I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. Tweet using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. And earlier this month, the Tampa Bay Times published a column you penned on this very issue. I was hoping you could just give us the crux of your argument regarding the National Flood Insurance Program, its current debt load, and how the government, federal government, should go about administering flood insurance premium rate increases.
Well, John, thanks again for having me on the show. And yeah, I did pen that op-ed a few weeks ago because, as your previous guest mentioned, you know, the NFIP is about $23 billion in debt. And with no practical means to repay that sum, they paid back about $1 billion. But we haven't had any major quote unquote flood events since Katrina and Sandy, and we're just one major flood event away from incurring another multi-billion-dollar debt. So it's the way we see the NFIP is. It's almost a perverse government intrusion into the market because what it has caused is it has encouraged development, irresponsible development in high-risk areas with promise of flood insurance and at subsidized rates. So what we're as a think tank out of Washington, D.C., we're a free market organization. What we support is allowing private carriers to enter the market to not only set proper rates that are commensurate with risk, but also as a taxpayer protection initiative, because yes, the $23 billion that are owed to the Treasury, which is taxpayer backed. So we feel that it's good for taxpayers. It's also good for consumers themselves, because the NFIP is a one size fits all insurer where you have no options for deductibles. You have no options. They don't cover certain things. For example, cost of living coverage in case you have a total loss. Yes, they'll pay for your house, but where you have no policy covering you for renters, for your rent whenever you have to leave your property while it's being rebuilt. Things like that that the private market can tailor make a policy for you that the NFIP cannot do. And we just find it to be a win-win for consumers when there's more than one option on the street for them.
Do you or the R Street Institute have an issue even with just how the program itself is designed to work? I mean, I think as the way Chris put it was, on good years, they pay back debt to the Treasury from, the years when they're paying out claims for disasters. It's like, well, what happens when you have a lot of disasters, coming up in consecutive years or not even consecutive years, as we saw with Sandy and Katrina?
Well, that's the problem, is that the NFIP, it has, in many respects, it does charge rates below actuarially sound, science. And these are subsidized rates. And the problem is that they, on their own, if left to their own devices, they would have gone insolvent years ago, except for the government bailouts that they receive. And make no mistake about it, the $23 billion that it owes the Federal Treasury, that's a bailout. That is, there's no other two ways about that. Private insurance carriers, on the other hand, they don't receive that benefit from the taxpayers. They don't have the luxury of underpricing their policies and then, when they go bankrupt after a major event, go to the federal government with a cap in hand. They have to be reinsured. They have to maintain surplus levels that are adequate to cover their risk. So ultimately, we do not approve of the way that the NFIP is structured. For example, Citizens Property Insurance Corporation here in the state of Florida, which is the insurer of last resort, mm-hmm. Purchase private reinsurance. They purchase it from the private market, and they also purchase it from the Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund. And there is a scenario where taxpayers from the state of Florida may have to bail out Citizens in case of a major, major event, but that is so unlikely because of the way that Citizens has structured itself in recent years, I have to say, because under Governor Charlie Crist, he expanded Citizens in a way that I would consider reckless, without any means for it to really meet its obligations in the case of a major storm. But since then, the legislature and the current governor have taken steps to insulate Citizens and from such a situation through the purchase of private reinsurance and quite honestly by fostering a private market within the state of Florida. So Citizens, it has gone back to an insurer of last resort. And that's ideally what we would like to see the NFIP go back to or go to at some point, is an insurer of last resort for people who legitimately cannot obtain coverage in the private market. And unfortunately, a lot of people cannot obtain private coverage in the private market today, not because there's not a market out there that's willing to write these policies, but because of government intervention and regulatory hurdles that the Dennis Ross, Patrick Murphy bill that unanimously passed Congress seek to resolve. So hopefully, the Senate will take up this bill and pass it out. I don't know what the delay is, but how Washington works.
Sure. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show, but thanks too much to my guest, Christian Camara. He's Senior Fellow and Florida State Director for the Public Policy Research Organization, the R Street Institute. Thanks again for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And earlier, we'd heard a recorded conversation with Chris Heidrich of the Heidrich & Company insurance team based on Sanibel Island. There's more information on today's show and past editions of the program online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers Richard Chinqui and AJ Leonard. This is WGCU FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM.